Welcome in to the Odds and Audibles podcast. And this is going to be the last time that the three of us are on the show. I'm Matt Brame, Eric Scopel, John Evans on the show. For John, this will be his last show with us. Not part of the, not leaving the network. John, you can, this is your job. This is your departure. You can explain what you're doing, but this is your last show with us as an official part of DuckTerritory.com.
Yeah, I am in Tallahassee now. I've made it down here. Got to meet Mike Norvell and the coaching staff yesterday because I have joined the FSU beat. Very thankful to these guys helping me get connected, you know, within the network and stuff like that. But yeah, this is where we're headed is uncertainty at this juncture for Florida State, but it's going to be interesting. I think we did a podcast last night and I was trying to, you know, people were asking me about the offense and I'm like, well, I don't really know. I think it's going to be a lot of experimentation and stuff like that because they got some things to figure out and then it's pretty quickly going to have to play Alabama. So it's going to be an interesting season for Florida State down here, but I'm excited for the journey and very glad that I, you know, got all the experience I did covering Oregon and you know, kind of trying to translate that to this. So
I think I can speak for Eric, for both of us. This is a bittersweet moment. It's awesome to see you get a job within the network and get it at a big time program. But this is, you know, you spent 3 years here working with us and covering the Ducks, and you've done tremendous work, and it's going to be hard to replace all the stuff that you have brought to the table, whether it's here on the podcast from an analysis standpoint or in the interviews or with the content that you've written on the site.
And I'll just chime in and say, just to clarify, we fought to try to have John retained in some capacity with Duck Territory, and unfortunately it didn't work. You know, like higher ups make some decisions, and we're just thrilled that he has a full-time job directly out of college covering Florida State, which is a big program in disarray, which John has alluded to there. You mentioned you were just doing some Ashton Daniels film breakdown. It was a little different than your Dante Moore film breakdown.
Yeah, it's not quite the same.
But like you said, you know, this is one of the historically fantastic and great elite blue blood programs, and it's a pretty cool place to start your career. So we wanted to have you on to do an official send-off, kind of like what we did with Jared last year, and then we'll also tackle some Oregon stuff here. And as we were saying right before we jumped on, it's possible John jumps on, you know, at times throughout the season, after the season, if he's got a little break from Florida State stuff to give us some Oregon thoughts. But yeah, this will be, unfortunately, the last one with the three of us kind of, you know, on a regular basis. And it's a bittersweet ending, as Matt said. Really proud of the work John did, the growth he showed from start to finish. And now we send him off to do bigger and better things down in Tallahassee.
I don't know about bigger and better, but certainly different. You know, they just built a new training facility down here that we got to tour on Friday. Very, very nice. Very like, I got to see all the behind the scenes stuff, all the stuff that they're, you know, putting in there. But at the same time, I'm like, yeah, they went and toured all these places so that they could build it. And Oregon is doing the exact same thing and continuing to, you know, build on and add their own new training facility. So I'm sure Dan is going to miss me pestering him with questions about offensive line schemes and defensive line depth and stuff like that. But Mike Norvell will have to get used to it because, you know, I was already asking him yesterday about Ashton Daniels stuff and how they're going to try to build this offense. It's interesting, but we'll see. Not quite the same level of drop back passer, not a lot of backside dig reads the way that Dante Moore is able to get to, but it's going to be something. The biggest thing is I'm like, regardless of how this season goes for Florida State, it's going to be an adventure. Like either they, you know, somehow pick it up and then Norvell saves his job and then it's where do you go from there, or it doesn't go particularly well like it has the past couple of seasons, and then it's a coaching search and figuring things out from there as well. So it's a lot of unknown with this program, but it's exciting to, you know, have a spot to kind of go into. It's a lot to be going into as my first job, which is exciting. And like you were saying, I at this point I'm an alumni now, so yeah. I will always be following my Ducks and certainly be watching this season, especially when it's I'm hoping that they end up with some late kickoffs so that I can do Florida State stuff and then you have a chance to watch Oregon at like 10 Eastern or something like that. But definitely we'll be watching the Ducks as much as I can, because there's one of those teams is going to be competing for a national championship most likely, and the other one is going to be competing for bowl eligibility.
We'll let the listener decide which one you meant.
Yes. You mentioned the word adventure. I got to ask, how was the drive from Eugene, Oregon, all the way across the country to Tallahassee? And did you actually end up doing it by yourself like you originally planned? I have to know this answer.
Yeah, I did it entirely by myself. I was able to stop down in California to visit my girlfriend for a couple days, do 4th of July and stuff like that, which like kind of broke it up. But it was in total 7 days of driving.
Jeez.
It was like California was pretty cool at some points, like Mount Shasta, like into the desert in Arizona and New Mexico. Like I'd never seen some stuff like that before. But once I hit Texas, like once I got past El Paso where I stayed with some friends, yeah, it's a lot of straight and flat and ranches and maybe some oil fields if you're lucky. So once you got into Louisiana and the swamp, then it's like, okay, now I'm kind of feeling like I'm in the Southeast and stuff. But the temperature was certainly adjustment as well. I got out of the car at one point in Arizona and it was like 115 and just the hottest wind I've ever felt in my entire life. Like it just felt like I'd opened the oven door, but that was just outside. So it's not quite that hot down here. It's more like high 90s and stuff, but it's just humid and, yeah, it's a little sweaty, but we'll get used to it and make those adjustments because, you know, like I've been telling my friends, in January when they're in Seattle and in Oregon, places like that, and it's 40 degrees and raining, it's going to be like 70 and sunny here in Tallahassee. So I'm looking forward to that.
Absolutely. One more. I have one more Oregon tie-in here for you. Just your biggest moment, your favorite moment.
Yeah, good
question. Covering Oregon in the 3 years that you did, what was it for you?
I think it would probably be the game up at Washington last year. I wasn't doing the like beat stuff with you guys, but that was a culmination for me because it was the first game I called on the radio for KWVA. Like I called a bunch of other games. I was supposed to call the Wisconsin game the year before on the road before we unfortunately ran out of money halfway through the year because of some prior people within the station. Wow. But the year after that, I got to go up and call that Washington game with one of my really good friends, Saul. And then after that, doing a podcast with you guys in the stadium, you know, like as the lights were going down. And that's where I grew up. I grew up a mile north of UW Stadium. So it's just, I mean, that's going back home for me is always really cool to see that. And I came into that rivalry as a student, watched them lose 3 times in a row and had to go home and sell Pac-12 championship shirts at Dick's Sporting Goods over winter break, which was not particularly very fun as everyone continued to just give it to me because they knew I was the Oregon guy around there. But yeah, that was just such a fun experience going up there and seeing that one. And then I didn't cover the Ohio State game 2 years ago because there were so many people from Ohio State coming in that they, you know, there wasn't necessarily room in the press box for the intern. But yeah, that's my Autzen Spirit Stadium memory that is always going to be. I rushed the field after that. I yelled at Justice Lowe for his blocking. I was like, way to go block there. It's a clip I posted before where he just seals the edge on a 3rd and 6. And I saw him down there and I was like, way to set the edge there, Justice. Like he yeah, that's always going to be the memory for me at Autzen Stadium is that game.
Awesome. Awesome. Let's go to transition now to the Big Ten Media Day rankings and polls and whatnot, which, by the way, the Big Ten are going on right now. I'm in Chicago. I'm at the hotel where it's at, a very swanky hotel. I tried to book a room last night when I realized I was going to get into Chicago at 6 a.m. Hotel rooms are going for $1,000 a night at this hotel. Don't think that's in the budget, Eric, for us.
No, to
going here.
That doesn't necessarily go on a company card.
So it's a very swanky old hotel. Oregon will speak on Wednesday, the 29th. So we'll have coverage of that. But before the Big Ten Media Day started, they're a little bit different. We're still adjusting to how things are operating right here in the Big Ten. They don't do an actual league-sponsored preseason poll.
It's absurd.
Why,
it's
I do not know.
Don't have an answer.
Let's gather the media all together here and not ask them to tell us who's the best.
We got the rankings out. Eric, why don't you give the rankings?
Yeah, so there are multiple polls that are dropped here, and the one we're looking at is by Columbus.com, which I'm sure is going to be, listeners are going to think is a little bit maybe Ohio State centric, and yes, they are at the top of the poll, but I think overall it looks about what I would have expected. You've got Oregon at number two behind Ohio State. There are 31 voters, it looks like, and Oregon had 11 of the 31 first place votes. I think that seems about right. They're 13 points off Ohio State. A nice cluster at the top with those two. And then Indiana, the defending champion, 5 first place votes at number 3. And then we'll just kind of run through the rest of these here. USC at 4. I got some thoughts on that in terms of what that means for this year's matchup in Los Angeles in, gosh, about 2 months. Michigan 5, Penn State 6, the Washington Huskies 7, Iowa 8, Illinois 9. That's another one of the road trips. Minnesota 10, Nebraska 11, Wisconsin 12. UCLA also, well, it says UCLA 12, but they actually have 13th most votes. So I'm going to correct that and say UCLA 13th because it's wrong in the data I've got here. Northwestern 14th, Maryland 15th, Michigan State 16th, Rutgers, Purdue, rounding it all out. And, you know, I think that we just react to the poll because there's also some player of the year votes that are incorporated with this. There's the all conference teams, which I know Matt posted a story on a couple hours before we jumped on here for the podcast, but Oregon at number 2, receiving, you know, a very similar number of votes. Again, Ohio State at 540, Oregon 527. How does that kind of sit with both of you guys? Is that what you expected? And I'll just kind of send it over saying, I think it's a pretty reasonable representation. These two teams, I think, are arguably the most talented teams in the country or in that conversation with Texas and Notre Dame and maybe Georgia. I think having them at the top makes sense. Are we okay with the order?
I feel like Ohio State is just the certainty. Like that's they can become the default answer because they're Ohio State. And when they return the talent that they do, Jeremiah Smith coming back, Julian Sain coming back at quarterback, they kind of just become the default answer. And especially when Oregon, you look roster for roster, I think the Ducks can be right there with them. But the Ducks have left sour tastes in people's mouths the last couple of years. Ohio State 2 years ago, Indiana last year, just on the biggest stage when everyone's watching. I think when you talk from a national perspective, it becomes easy to make Ohio State that default pick, but I think roster for roster, these teams can go at each other, which is why, you know, that game out in Columbus is going to be so exciting this season.
Yeah, I agree that Ohio State probably should be one, but Oregon should be right behind them, if not 1A to 1B. I did write on the site a story about it, and I felt like the proof is in the pudding right now with Indiana. And while I understand maybe not putting them number one in the poll, I would have the gap be a lot smaller of a margin between Ohio State and Indiana and Oregon and Indiana, just because 2 years in a row now, Kurt Cignetti and the Hoosiers have shown us that they can completely flip the roster and they can get to college football playoff. And then last year, win it all. And until we see the process not work, I think you need to give them the benefit of doubt because they won the national championship.
I think we got a glitch there from Matt, so I'll just cut in. I'm sorry, Matt. I think your internet's a little spotty there at the hotel. Apologies for listeners. Hopefully he gets his connection a little bit back. But I agree with that. I think the thing that's interesting when you look at these teams at the top of the poll, and this was the order I think we all suspected it would be, or at least the grouping. And again, I think you could probably move these around if you'd like, but I feel pretty comfortable with where they're at. But Oregon has, to your point, Matt, about kind of Ohio State becoming kind of the de facto, Oregon retains more starters, and certainly on defense, than these other teams. And you know, we'll get to the preseason defensive player of the year award list in a second. I think that's pretty interesting to look at, but I don't think it would surprise me at all if Oregon ends up being the best of these three teams based upon the fact that you look on the defensive side of the football and they return a heck of a lot more than Ohio State does and what Indiana does. And I know Indiana has probably a couple more star players, but the Buckeyes sent, it was pretty crazy. I was looking at this, 6 NFL players on defense in the first 3 rounds last season. That's a lot of guys,
including that, 3 guys in the top 10.
Right. So it's an immense amount of talent that they're replacing. It's Ohio State. We know they'll do a good job. I maybe listeners hadn't seen, but I did my prediction for the season. I have Oregon winning every game, which I know has kind of been met with some skepticism. But then, you know, people don't like the 12-0 prediction. My point in the
it's Oregon, understandable.
I think it was fair, and maybe we'll do a podcast yes. here. breaking it down.
Did you have them 12-0 when they hit it a couple years ago?
I did. I had them 12-0, and then I had them 11-1 last year. My one loss was Penn State, not Indiana. So I've actually had
Eric and I both had them 12-0 2 years ago.
Yeah, 24.
I think I had them 12-0 last year, and you did not.
Yeah, I think we might have both had them losing to Penn State. We'd have to go back and look. I know I had them losing to Penn State and winning the rest. But you know, my point remains: the reason I had Oregon over Ohio State in this game, and again, it's first week of November. A ton of stuff will have changed to that point, but the reason there's a case is that Oregon does have so much more, returning defensive talent and reliable talent, which is why, again, we'll get into it. But the defensive player of the year award is just all Oregon guys, basically at the top. I think there's a case to be made that this individual unit, Oregon defensively, could be the best defense in the conference this year. Ohio State and Oregon offensively, I'll throw Indiana just because of what we've seen from Cignetti recently. Like, we'll have elite offensive talent. USC will have elite offensive talent, but I think Oregon on defense is going to be the separator, which is why I was comfortable putting them at the top here. And we'll see if that plays out, because Ohio State, Indiana have been awesome defensive teams these last couple of seasons, but they have a little bit more to replace and work on than the Ducks do right now, it looks like.
I think part of that continuity factor falls in with Indiana too, because like, you're replacing the Heisman Trophy winner at quarterback, the number one overall draft pick. That's a guy who came in and that from Cal. They see the same, formula working with Josh Hoover for them, but they're also at the same time that Indiana team was so much built on the continuity they had from the year before, the continuity that a lot of those guys had from Cignetti's stop at James Madison before that. So it's a lot of Indiana. It's a lot of now this is the proof of concept year for Cignetti, where he did this kind of insane rebuild in 2 years at Indiana and just brought them out of nowhere to a national championship. And now it's can that sustain when you're bringing guys in from the portal? We've seen him get big time recruits recently as well. So it's kind of just elevating that program. And so that's why I think they fall a little bit behind there too. But like you said, I think the defense really just does become that standout. Like, and this is what I was talking about with some of the Florida State guys. I was on with them last week talking about the 3-3-5 nickel defense that Tony White runs here at Florida State. A lot of similar principles to some of the stuff that Oregon did last year with the three safety stuff with Dylan Thienemann. So I thought it was really interesting to see that. But also, that worked because you have four NFL defensive linemen up there. You got Brandon Finney on the outside, who's going to be a first round pick in a couple years. You have just talent returning on this defense that not a lot of teams are going to have. And when you look at last year's team, it was, three, four starters on the entire roster coming back. That's not at all the case this year. This is going to be one of the most experienced rosters in the country. It's guys, year two of Dante Moore to DeCorian Moore. It's just the defensive line strength that you're going to have with guys who are all going to go in the first couple rounds of the NFL draft this year. It's just really, really impressive in terms of the retention that Dan Lanning has been able to do. And that's kind of what speaks to what he's done with his roster, is that they bring these guys in, but nobody who walks out the door, they wanted to see go out the door. It's the only people, except for maybe this offseason when you had some of the D-line depth and stuff that you lost to Cal when Tosh Lupoi left, but like Oregon is not losing impact starters to other programs. And they're not even just losing impact starters to other programs. They're not losing those guys to the NFL. Amari Washington would have been a first round pick if he had gone this year, and he's going to be back and going to be one of the best defensive tackles in the country.
What are our thoughts on the league media basically saying it's a three-team race, because the gap between Oregon and Ohio State and Indiana is relatively close to some degree. But then USC at four is substantially on the list than everybody else.
I think a couple of things, Matt. This is the highest USC's been in one of these. This is the highest Washington's been in one of these. The highest UCLA's been in one of these. Ty's the highest Oregon's been. It clearly seems like the Big Ten media is high on West Coast football right now, which I think seems reasonable. Like USC and UCLA should undoubtedly be better than they were last year. And I think the Trojans are kind of an interesting case, because we know what Lincoln Riley's teams look like when they're at their best. What are they going to be on defense? And I think that's the question. Like I have confidence in what Oregon is on defense. I don't know if I know what USC is going to be on defense. And I don't know if they, honestly, I don't know if their offense is better than the three teams ahead of them, or at least has enough of a gap or at all to make up that difference. So them being at four is interesting. I think it's the most compelling the Oregon-USC rivalry has been in a while. Like I was looking at it, Oregon is currently 5.5-point road favorites for that game at the end of September. 2020, I think in 2025, they've closed at 10.5. And in 2023, it was like 16.5. I pulled this up for a story I wrote recently. It feels like this is the most competitive that game has been in a while. So that stands out to me. And then I guess just another thought here on the schedule. Oregon plays five teams in conference that are top nine on this preseason ranking. 2024, it was three teams. Last year, it was four teams. So this is kind of the highest number of, I guess, there's maybe more bullets in the chamber this year from a schedule perspective that can concern you.
That's how it goes in this like version of the Big Ten when you have 18 teams. Though, like I've seen it with the softball team the last couple of years where they've been in the Big Ten 2 years and they haven't played Nebraska, who's along with them and UCLA one of the like three good teams right in the conference. Like when you have that many teams, it's just going to create this schedule imbalance. Where I mean, like you saw in the ACC last year, where Duke like got an easy schedule and made it to the ACC championship game because of that. It's kind of just like a product of like college sports these days when the conferences are as large as they are. It creates a lot of imbalance, which then like or Indiana a couple years ago, like how good is that team really if they didn't play anybody besides Ohio State the entire season and like within the conference? So I think like USC, just like you said, the uncertainties on defense, they have getting Maiava back is obviously is huge for them at quarterback, but I think that's just kind of where those tiers separate within the conference. Is you have there's three teams that are receiving first place votes. It's Indiana, Ohio State, and Oregon, and then there's the other teams behind them. And I think that's just the separator, is you know what you're getting. You think you know what you're getting in terms of Indiana and Kurt Cignetti, and you have all these guys coming back at Oregon and Ohio State. And USC is a lot of, you know, they had the number one recruiting class and it's all that kind of stuff. But can Lincoln Riley really do this? Because it hasn't really happened yet for him at USC besides that first year with Caleb Williams.
Do we want to move to the player recognition for offense and defense next?
I just had one other schedule thought, and not to belabor it too much. I do think it's interesting looking at this more closely with the numbers next to the teams. The month of October, I think, is the easiest schedule, yes, Oregon has had in the Big Ten.
Hands down.
And the month of November, I think, is the most difficult when you look at the way all this falls together. October, it's three home games against teams ranked 11, 13, and 14 in the conference rankings. Those are, as you know, give me a games as you're going to get all season. You got Illinois on the road in the middle there. That's number nine, right? So it's like one top half team. Everything else is really, really easy. Like they're going to be 2 to 3 score favorites against those home games. And then November, like it's Ohio State to start. That's really difficult. It's Michigan, who's number five after that. You play Michigan State, which is one of the worst teams in the conference. They're 16th. That's a road game. That's not a game that gets interesting. And then Washington at number seven here, that's, again, the highest they've been ranked in one of these polls since they joined the conference. So you get three top seven teams with one of them on the road in that span. I just think it's interesting. You're going to have that big game with USC at the end of September to kind of get a real barometer check. And then it's going to be like, I went to Gonzaga. I liken it to the WCC portion of the Gonzaga schedule, where it's just like they're not really challenged, we don't really learn anything, and then they get to March, and they're, you know, in this case, in my analogy, is that November run where you play Ohio State. That could be 1 versus 2. Michigan's probably going to be ranked. I think there's a good chance Washington is in that kind of case too, based upon their schedule. It's going to be a really fun kind of way that this plays out, where you go from kind of just kind of a mop up duty month there in April or October to, oh man, now it gets really real, real fast with Ohio State and everybody in November.
And that's a lot of big travel too. You're traveling to Ohio State in November. When they went there a couple of years ago, it was like an early September game where they went and upset Ohio State. But you're traveling to Ohio State in November, and then even that Michigan State game, you got to go to a traditional Big Ten school in the cold. We've seen it last year at Iowa. We saw it at Wisconsin a couple of years ago. Those games, even if the teams are less talented than Oregon, at that point injuries can be a factor, and the weather can be a factor. Just it gets a little more complicated than you realize sometimes in those late season games.
Position-wise, Dante Moore came second behind Jeremiah Smith for preseason offensive MVP. I had absolutely zero issue with this. Did you guys have any issue? I mean, Jeremiah Smith's the biggest name in the conference, probably maybe the biggest name in college football. Like,
I think he's probably the best player.
Yeah, Jeremiah Smith's the best player in the country, and he's probably going to go first overall in the draft unless, you know, someone thinks they need a quarterback. He's going to be the best player in this draft and the best player in the country this year. He basically has been since a freshman.
I, I was actually, I thought it was, so Dante got 8 first place votes out of 31. I thought that was pretty notable to me, that there were enough people that cast votes for him over Jeremiah Smith. I know it, quarterbacks and Julian Sang, we should note, also got a couple of first place votes. But
I can't imagine voting for Julian Sang and not like Dante Moore over Julian Sang. That's whatever conversation it is. But if you're saying Julian Sang's going to have a good year, I think Jeremiah Smith's going to have about 1,600 yards and 15 touchdowns or something like that.
No, I was just going to say it was interesting to see the two quarterbacks get some attention because Smith plays receiver and usually these awards go to quarterbacks. I just think it's such a gap between him and everyone else at that particular position. And again, I think he's the best player in the country. So I had no problem with it. I do think Dante getting 8 first place votes was kind of a tip of the cap though.
Yeah. My issue though came with Ohio State.
I'm sorry. I just saw someone voted for Damon Williams to be a offensive player of the year. I would say watch the Oregon tape last year.
Yes. Yes. Well, to his credit, it was also a lack of offensive line being able to block for him in that game. But
yeah, still. I think he's also 5'9".
Yes.
Hey, Kyler Murray's my quarterback in Minnesota now. Stop it, guys.
my issue, though, is that Ohio State had 3 guys, Julian Sam being one of them, Jeremiah Smith, obviously. Then they had one of their running backs get picked. And I'm not going to sit here and argue that this player should be in the top 5 or anything like that, but he should have at least gotten some kind of recognition, in my opinion. If we're going to have Ohio State with 3 guys, I think Jordan Davidson from Oregon should have been on this list as well. Or maybe there's some reluctancy of putting a Jamari Johnson as a tight end, but I just felt like Oregon's offense is not just elite because of Dante Moore. Certainly it's a huge help, but they've got plenty of other offensive weapons that if Dante Moore wasn't at quarterback for Oregon, these guys would still be having huge years because of their own skill sets.
If I had to vote for another player on Oregon's roster, it'd be Jamari Johnson to me. I think he's going to have a massive season for the Ducks this year. Like, he was honestly as good as, if not better than, Kenyon Sadiq down the stretch last season, and I think he's going to be arguably the best tight end in the draft this year as well. I think the Davison point, like, I think that's kind of comes down to, like, people are like, oh, well, he's going to be splitting carries with D'Arre Hill the whole season.
Right.
Like, he may rack up touchdowns, but those guys are going to be like a 1-2. It's not even like it's going to be a 1A and 1B type thing. Like, those guys are the starting running back together. So I think that kind of just deters people there. And again, same with, like, if you like a DeCorian Moore, he could have a huge breakout sophomore season, sure. But you also have Evan Stewart, Jeremiah McClellan, just so many like pass catchers in this offense that it kind of, you know, collectively, hey, if Oregon's going to have a really good season and those guys have big years, well, I get best bet Dante Moore probably has a really good year and goes top 3 in the draft.
Couple thoughts on that, point, Matt. For Dante's Heisman case and kind of the perception nationally, if this may bode well, if the perception is he's doing it, I don't want to say all on his own, but he's clearly the star player of this offense, because as we see on the defense, which you're going to get to, there's no split of the vote here. He got all the votes. So that could be a benefit kind of in disguise. The other thing I'm wondering, and you mentioned his name, John, if DeCorian had been healthy the whole way through the season, and let's say he finished with 750 yards rather than whatever it was, something in the 400 range, I wonder if there's a little bit of a different discussion point here. Obviously, he's not Jeremiah Smith Jr. Jeremiah is going to be the one to receive all the attention. But I do wonder, had DeCorian finished the season, had the kind of year we thought he was on pace to have, if that might have shifted a little bit of the attention with him. But to John's point, he's also sharing it with Evan. He's sharing it with Jeremiah. Jamari is going to be a big part of this pass offense. There's, in a way, and maybe this is the deterrent for getting players on here, there's almost just too many good players on this Oregon offense to really fit them all in. And most voters just go, we're just going to mark the quarterback and move on. I think that's, again, could be a benefit for Dante as the year goes on.
Yeah, I think it just like you said, it just becomes like a Dante Moore by default. If Oregon's going to be good offensively, Dante Moore is going to be like at the heart of it. And you can kind of pretty easily pencil him into that award then.
Defensively now, to Eric's point, he teased it perfectly. This is a split vote for Oregon that quite honestly could probably hurt some of these guys' chances of winning Defensive Player of the Year if it comes this way, because 4 guys got first place votes. A 5th did not, but scored, I think, relatively high in like the top 7 of the rankings. Brandon Finney comes in 2nd. Overall, among all defensive players, actually had more first place votes than Minnesota's representation. The name is escaping me off the top of my head, but who ended up being the league's preseason defensive player of the year. So Brandon Finney had more first place votes than the winner did. But Coy Parrish got some, Tatum Tuioti got some, Amari Washington got some. And then Mateo Uyunglele was also ranked, which just, I think, tells you the level of respect that those around the league have for Oregon's defense, that this might be the most talented defense we've seen come through this program.
Yeah, and to the point you made, Matt, Anthony Smith is the Minnesota player who won the award. He had two first-place votes. Oregon had four guys with more first-place votes. This was a total split vote situation. Finney had six. Tuioti had six. Omari Washington had five. Coy Parrish had four. Oregon had the four top, you know, the four players with the most first-place votes. That sort of speaks to it. They had 21 of the 32 cast. So I think when people were going through this exercise, as somebody who's done this before, you know, you pick your guy, and in a case like this where it's pretty open, a lot of people just had slightly different opinions on who to pick from Oregon. I mean, it's pretty clear people wanted to pick an Oregon defensive player, and Smith kind of benefits from this. And in the total votes, like, I think this is pretty notable too. Like, you know, it's the same number of people who voted. You know, Jeremiah Smith had 82 points. Dante Moore had 62. The top vote getters for this were Anthony Smith with 26 overall points and Brandon Finney with 25 overall points. Like, it was really, really split here. And, you know, I don't think it's by mistake that people look at these four players and think they can all win conference player of the year. I think Mateo deserves to be in that discussion. He has the eighth most points with seven, by the way. But it's pretty clear that the voters are looking at this and going, Oregon has the top defense because they have all these guys listed near the top. And who do you like? And one other note is, I know that there was a second media poll that was released, and Amari Washington won defensive player of the year there. So maybe that's the hint or maybe the answer. But like, if you're picking between one of these four guys,
who do you pick?
Yeah, who do you land? I don't know, Matt. Do you have a name off the top of your head?
Finney, probably.
Yeah.
Especially if he has like a big game at like covering Jeremiah Smith at Ohio State,
or Tatum Tuioti, just because.
I think the fact that Tatum has as many votes as Finney for first place, like the two of them are within this one, are both tied with six first place votes for the most men among the Oregon players. I think that's certainly notable. And the fact that like the perception is that he's the better guy out of him and Mateo, where that was not what people thought going into last year. And it's still, I feel like Mateo has a little bit of higher pass rush ceiling and stuff like that. But Tatum just shows up day in, day out, does the work, defends the run. He became so much better as a pass rusher last year that, you know, I think people are beginning to recognize that around the country.
I agree. Like, Tatum Tuioti last season was an afterthought for being a first or second round draft pick, while Mateo was looked at as a top 10 pick, and they've kind of inversed. I think Mateo's still got a really high chance of getting picked in the first round, but would any of us be shocked if he slipped into the second? Like, I wouldn't be. But Tatum has played his way into being an elite dude, and I think he's going to be the big name on this defense, kind of like the de facto guy up front. Finney will be the de facto guy on the back end, that if one of those two guys has a stellar year, or even just, you know, not a historical year, but a really just solid season, and Oregon's defense is elite, and they win the Big Ten, like, it's going to be hard for someone to not named Finney or Tatum Tuioti to win the award.
And with Washington on the other one, like, I think Washington has an argument to be the most talented player on this defense. He's probably going to be, I would guess, the first player off of Oregon's defense drafted this season. I think Brandon Finney maybe is the other guy in the conversation of most talented on the defense, but he's not draft eligible this year. But it just becomes...
I think John's pausing now, unfortunately. We have tough internet on this podcast here.
Tough internet.
Really pop, really flash, like a Jalen Carter did when he was at Georgia. And Amari absolutely has the talent to do something like that. But it's just, you know, media-wise, it's less likely, I think, that he gets that type of attention, especially if, you know, his pressure up the middle is creating sacks for Mateo and Tatum. You know, they're going to rack up those numbers.
I think Coy Parrish's name is the most interesting to me on this list. You know, I saw a couple people react with surprise that he was – third on the vote, had, you know, four first place votes, that he was kind of perceived that way, right? Coming over from Minnesota, you know, I guess a program that has, you know, developed the preseason pick here at Anthony Smith, but a program that maybe doesn't get as much attention nationally or even regionally. I think it sort of validates what this addition is when you look at it and say, not only was this the top safety prospect in the country, or transfer, sorry, I should say, in the country this offseason, not only was he a guy who's been an all-conference player, an all-American player before, but he's someone who's looked at as potentially the best player in defense in the conference, and clearly the best safety. Like you go down the list, there, like it, you have to go pretty far to find another safety on this list. He's pretty clearly perceived going in as the top safety in this conference. I know he was voted as well on that list that Matt wrote about earlier today, where was it like an 11 player list? That was kind of a weird
12 guys made the list. Offense and defense collectively were included in that 12. I really wish I could find someone here, and I probably could if I really wanted to find the answer. But why do we not do true 11-man offense, 11-man defense, a preseason pick? Why do we not do that? It's a weird thing with the Big Ten.
It makes too much sense.
Yeah.
Well, because they do it postseason. They do all the awards postseason. I don't know. That doesn't make sense. But anyway, I just think Parrish's inclusion here hasn't been in an Oregon uniform yet, right, besides the spring game. Fans haven't really seen him play, but he's already perceived as potentially the best defensive player in the conference. I think that is not insignificant in terms of the way to kind of look at him and his season with the Ducks.
I mean, as much as Coy doesn't want to hear it, I think that's people around the country looking at what happened with Dylan Thienemann last year, coming from a smaller school, you know, having a really productive year at safety and going to be a first-round draft pick. He's a different player. They have some similar skill sets, but they're certainly different players. They do different things out there on the field. And he, when we talked to him in the spring, he did not really want to hear the Dylan Thienemann comparisons, even though that's the narrative that's easily going to be out there. But I think that's what a lot of people recognize is that Oregon has become this place where you can take those talented transfers who didn't necessarily, you know, Bear Alexander types, who didn't necessarily hit at their previous stops, or even had, you know, talent, but were, you know, at a smaller school like Purdue or Minnesota, and then translate it into big time football at the highest winning level. And that's what we saw with Dylan Thienemann last year. And that's what I think people project to see from Coy Parrish.
100%. And I agree with John that the Parrish one is going to be the one that's kind of based off of last season with Thienemann, and we'll see where he goes. And if he steps up, he has just as much of a right. If he has a couple game ceiling interceptions or big tackles, it's going to be hard to take away his opportunity as well. But I think that the overwhelming factor here is that the league's media views Oregon's defense as having, at least from a first place perspective, the more talented guys on this defense, and multiple ones of them as well. So it's going to be fun seeing play it out. And for John, it's going to be fun seeing you cover another team across the country. We're going to miss you, dude. I know our paths at some point will cross again. It has to happen. It will happen at some point. But I highly encourage everyone to continue reading his work for our Florida State site on 24/7 Sports. But John, this is the last time we're going to sign off. So, you know, I'll let you hang up on this one for the podcast. But we're going to miss you, man. We're really going to miss you.
I'm going to miss the people of, you know, just this site in general. I really enjoyed, you know, getting, I got to meet some people from the boards, especially with the softball community that I was able to build last year. It was just so fun to, you know, see that support and see that, you know, people appreciated the work that I was doing. You know, I did a lot of work for free at Oregon. I spent my Sundays last year locked in my room watching, you know, tape back so I could figure out what was going on with Wilstein's offense. And that was also that I could, you know, get to this point and get a job after college. But it was really fun to be able to see that community grow. And, you know, when I put up the, you know, the posts on the board last week, just to see all the nice messages that people had. And it reminds me why I want to do this thing, is because I like talking about sports, and I like, you know, talking about sports with the community of people that, you know, we have at 24/7 Sports. So it's been a really fun journey, and I'm excited to, you know, continue to see where it goes. And absolutely, I will be back. I will be back in Eugene at some point, and I will have to hit you guys up. And I will probably have some West Coast swings in the next couple of years when they're going to have some Stanford and Cal games and stuff like that. So yeah, the ACC is both coastal, but bi-coastal now, and so is the Big Ten. So that's college football today, but it's yeah, we're going to see how it goes. That's kind of how my attitude here going into Florida State is, we're going to see how it goes, because it's not a lot of certainty, but it's a lot of interest. So it's definitely will give me things to write about.
It's going to do it for us here on the Odds and Audibles podcast. Until the next one with just Eric and I, you've been listening to the Odds and Audibles podcast.
Talk to you later, folks.
See ya.
Out of the shadows of Paramount Mountain, three heroes level up. Axe, Tyrus, and Gilius battle against the evil giant Death Adder to save the kingdom of Uria from so much peril. Laser knives, ornery dwarves, bad brothers, sentient skeletons, sword scorpions, death armor, fire, imp, this thing, that thing, whatever that is, so much peril and heroes.
This is just the beginning of the story of Hampton Square.
Golden Axe, new series streaming September 16th on Paramount+.